Applying for your first job can be daunting. What do I include on my resume? How do I write a cover letter? Do I need a LinkedIn profile? Today, we chat about resumes, cover letters, LinkedIn, and more with Leslie Noble, Program Director at 4-H Canada. 4-H Canada has a wealth of learning resources related to careers, along with an entire program based around preparing 4-H'ers for the future. Hope you enjoy today's show. Welcome to 4-H for You, where we hope to inspire you to use your head, heart, hands, and health to best serve yourself and others each and every day. Hi, Leslie. Thank you so much for joining me today on the 4-H for You podcast. We're so excited to have you here to chat all things careers. So maybe what we'll do is just get started, and I'll turn it over to you to tell us a little bit about yourself and your experience within 4-H Canada.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here. So my name is Leslie Noble. I'm the program director at 4-H Canada. My history with 4-H kind of dates back to being a member myself, and I come from a 4-H family, I guess you could say. I was a member, my mom was a member once upon a time and a leader, and my grandfather was even a leader back when my mom was young. So it's kind of interesting that my career has brought me right back to a programming that I participated in as a youth. I started with 4-H Canada in January of 2021 in the Adult Learning Manager role, and have just recently transitioned to the Program Director role. But in my role as Adult Learning Manager, one of the amazing programs that I got to oversee was the Careers on the Grow program, which is something that I'm really passionate about and think there's so many amazing opportunities to help support our members in their career development so that they can thrive in their future careers.
That's great. Thank you for sharing. I didn't realize that you were a past 4-H participant as well. That's very cool. Yeah. That's awesome. That really creates that connectivity, especially when you're overseeing so many programs that have such impact on the lives of our youth. So that's awesome. So again, why we asked you to join today is because of that connection when it came to careers and all the work that you did within that program as the Adult Learning Manager. And again, being able to support youth and their career development. So today we wanted to talk about a few things with related to tips on resumes, cover letters, LinkedIn profiles, all of these things that we can give to help support our youth and in their future. So maybe we'll start with just the resume. And when we're talking about the resume, what are three key tips for building your resume? And is there anything youth should avoid when it comes to this?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's really difficult to get started. So I've kind of put together three tips with lots of information related to those tips. So my first tip is to understand the job that you're applying for. So I would suggest that anyone start by reviewing the job post in detail and highlighting any key skills and knowledge and experience that the employer is looking for. There's typically going to be stated qualifications that are going to come out really clearly, but then there's also going to be things that are hidden or that kind of go without saying just because they're expected to be understood within the world of work. So for example, if we think about a job posting for a retail sales associate, it may not specifically say that the person needs to be friendly and outgoing, yet, you know, I think we can pretty much guess that interacting with members of the public and customers, it kind of goes without saying that the person is going to need to be friendly and outgoing. So once you're looking and finding all of those stated and hidden qualifications, the next step would be to write down your own skills and experience and find out where yours matches and aligns with what the job is looking for. The next tip I would say is to tailor your resume to fit the job that you're applying for. It's a little bit daunting to think about the fact that we might have to have multiple resumes depending on the type of job that we're applying for, but it's for a really good reason. It's important that when someone's applying for a job that they're using their resume to highlight the skills and experiences that they have that fit with what the job is looking for and what that future employer is looking for. So if we go back to that retail sales associate job, let's pretend that you have experience working on a family farm over the summer, and that might have included working in their farm market stall as well as picking produce. So in this case, if we're applying for a retail sales associate, we want to highlight the experience with customer service and processing sales rather than harvesting. We can just actually leave that off in this case. So we want to tailor the resume, use key terms and languages that we've already highlighted from the job posting. And by doing that, we're also going to help our resume get past any screening software that an employer might be using. And my third tip has to do with format and length. It's always difficult to determine should my resume be shorter, longer, and there's lots of advice out there. But generally speaking, most individuals would agree that a resume should be between 1 and 2 pages. If you're just starting participation in paid work, then maybe your resume doesn't need to be very long. 1 page should do. There's lots of resume formats out there. The key is to pick one that fits with who you are and that allows you to showcase a consistent and inviting story for your future employer. Employers are looking at lots of resumes. You want yours to invite them in and want to spend more time reading the details. So generally speaking, people break up their resumes by separating their education and experience. If you don't have a lot of experience and you're just starting in paid work or you're a recent graduate, list your education first, and vice versa. If you've been out of education for a while, you want to start with listing your experience first and in the order of most recent work. Then you can list your experiences separately with their own subheading and make sure you include the time that you worked there. Each work experience should include a couple of very short summarized bullet points that explain your experience and any accomplishments that you had with that employer based on what you already know your potential future employer is looking for. So the key here with those bullet points is to be concise and try and keep them under 2 lines of text. And a big suggestion here is to stay away from the temptation to just copy and paste from your current job or your past job description. You really want to highlight what you have to offer that you know this future employer is looking for. So then other things you can include on a resume would be a qualifications section where you can highlight things that set you apart, like specific skills or additional languages you might have. You can include some optional sections like volunteer work, activities or interests that showcase your non-work related things that you are involved with, but that should still connect back to the job that you're applying for. And one big thing that I would suggest that members not include on their resume is an objective statement. They do exist, but it really doesn't give you any advantage. And unless the job posting is looking for it, you can just take it off and actually use that space on your resume to highlight things that will help you get forward in the process. So just remember that the person looking at your resume, they could be looking at 50, 100 or more resumes. So try and keep it clean, concise, try and avoid multiple fonts or really tiny fonts, try and avoid colors. And definitely you don't want to crowd this space. You want it to be very inviting and pleasing to the person that's going to read it.
Wow, that's great, Leslie. So many great tips. I think it's easy to say when you write a cover letter, you're going to write a cover letter for each individual job you apply to, but really it does come back to the resume as well, because you're going to have certain skills that are going to cater to certain positions over others. And taking the time to go through that is a really important big step when it comes to putting that resume together.
Absolutely. It is a lot of work, but I think the better someone becomes at being able to tailor their resume to exactly what that potential future job is looking for, the more successful they're going to be. You know, you don't have to put everything on your resume. You just want to highlight those key things. The goal with your cover letter and your resume is to get that interview. And in that interview, that's when you have the chance to further explain and then provide more detail to all those things that you've talked about in your cover letter and resume.
Yeah, and I like the point too you made about the objective statement, because I have seen them before, and I think it's something that you will see if you Google, say, resume formats and things. But really, I guess your kind of objective statement is probably going to come out when you write your cover letter regardless. So if you can keep that space and free that up to talk more about the skills and the things that pertain to why you may be a great fit for that position, the more space, the better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to, I'm thinking about kind of the do's and the don'ts here. Do you include a photo or do you not include a photo? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's really personal preference. I don't think it necessarily hurts, provided that you're including something that looks professional, something that's, you know, current is key, and something that, you know, is just clean. I don't think you want a lot of background things in that photo. But from the same, you know, the same perspective, I don't think it hinders the process at all by not including it.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, that was one of my questions, just as, again, we were knowing that we were going to be chatting about resumes particular, is that that's one of those things that it's like, is it a thing you do or not? But that's great feedback. Thank you. And would you say for font size, probably like a 12 size font?
Yeah, my suggestion would be the same that you would use for any kind of school reports or professional letters, a 11 or 12 point font. You want to pick a font that's going to be easy to read. So nothing that's too cursive or fancy, and keeping in mind that just because you have a particular font on your computer doesn't necessarily mean that the person that's looking at your resume has that font. So you want to pick something that's standard, Times New Roman or Arial, that generally speaking, the vast majority of people have on their systems.
That's a great tip. I didn't think of that one.
Yeah, it could change your formatting, or it may not even load properly at all. And, you know, let's face it, if an individual has, you know, a mountain of resumes and applications to look through, they don't have the time to download a particular font or find a workaround to be able to access your information. They're simply going to close it and move on. And we don't want that to happen.
For sure, for sure. And when you spoke to about the skills and looking for those in the actual postings themselves, how many keywords would you say that you would pick to kind of look at and highlight in your own resume?
Yeah, that's a great question.
I think it's going to depend on the job posting itself. I think if we're looking at an entry level position, you know, there should be less than 5 kind of keywords that are going to really jump out once you take the time to really dig in and go through that posting in detail. A more senior level position may have a few more. The other thing is to not get confused between keywords and lingo. I think we want to really avoid lingo and any words that are, you know, not clear. The word synergy is a great example. It's such a buzzword, but what does synergy actually mean? So we want to focus on using really concise, precise language. Communication is simple or similar. We all have this big idea of what communication is, but it involves so many smaller skills. So rather than saying, you know, I have great communication skills, try and be more precise. You know, are you great at speaking in public? Are you excellent in, you know, sending emails? And try and refine what you mean by some of those big terms.
Right, for sure. And especially with communication, because it can be so overarching and it is part of our everyday lives, no matter what position you are. So it is kind of one of those terms that it does require some more specification for sure. That's a great point. Yeah. That's awesome. So maybe as we're kind of chatting about keywords and bringing those into the resume, maybe let's chat about the cover letter. So when would somebody want to do a cover letter, and what are 3 key considerations when writing a cover letter?
Great question. Cover letters are so different from a resume. Your cover letter is your opportunity to introduce yourself and to make a good first impression. Your cover letter is your chance to explain what you can do for this potential new employer and why you believe you're a good fit. There's kind of mixed and confusing messaging that exists around whether individuals should use or should not use a cover letter. Some job postings will state very specifically specifically if they would want a cover letter, or they may specify if they don't. My personal suggestion is that I think if you don't use a cover letter, you're missing a valuable opportunity to give some of that explanation and context and to really call yourself out as a good fit for the employer. So my suggestion would be, unless the job posting states specifically no cover letters, then it's best just to include one. When you're writing a cover letter, I would suggest doing some research on the company before you get started, or the organization, so that you can articulate in that cover letter why you want to work there and why you value what they do or how they're a part of a particular sector. You want to find a format for your cover letter that works for you and one that you're comfortable with. There's lots of templates out there that are good structures for a formal letter, and sticking with something similar to one of those should be a good tip and a good rule of thumb. It is a formal letter, the cover letter, so it should be treated like that. Use full sentences, paragraphs. You don't want to just use a list of bullet points the way you would in a resume. This is your chance to give some extra detail about your experiences that make you a great fit. So maybe there was something that you wanted to add a little bit more detail to, specifically that's on your resume. This is your chance to build that out into a bit of a couple of sentences, give it some context. But again, remember to tie everything back to why you value the company and why you would be a good fit for this job. Be concise. The cover letter should never be more than about a page. And then my last tip is just make sure you know who to address the cover letter to. Oftentimes a job posting may give a name, and you want to address that, your cover letter, to that individual. And if there's no name indicated, then simply using something general like "Dear Hiring Committee" or "To whom it may concern" would be perfectly acceptable in that case.
That's great. Thank you, Leslie. And I like what you mentioned too, when it comes to the, well, we don't want it to be formatted necessarily in the same way the resume is, but it's really an opportunity almost to build upon those skills. And you're maybe sharing, is it a matter of sharing like a story? I guess you wouldn't really be looking to repeat necessarily the skills. You don't want it to be repetitive in that nature, but more give more context per se, correct?
Absolutely. I think it's about giving context. And it could be context in a variety of ways. So for example, if someone has, you know, is partway through their career and they're making a conscious decision to take a step back in their career to start down another pathway, they may recognize that they're not going to be able to move laterally from one position in one career sector to another. And they may be fully prepared to take a lower paying job, but they may want to contextualize that decision in their cover letter so that the hiring committee knows what their expectations are and knows that they're making this decision conscientiously, and that they are still a good fit for this position that they've applied for. Like you said, you don't want to repeat, but you want to contextualize or provide a little bit more detail, and especially to help explain that why you think you're a good fit, why you think you're the best candidate for this position.
Right. That makes sense. And especially in the example you gave, like their skills and things, if it's, especially if it's in a different career sector, let's say somebody opening the resume and their cover letter may be like, hang on, like, where does this kind of fit and align necessarily with what this position is and why they like it? There may be questions of the why factor, but that cover letter is really the opportunity to give context to that and the background and let that person know a little bit more.
Absolutely. And I think it's, you know, again, if we think about the cover letter and the resume as the stepping stones to get that interview so that we have the opportunity to present ourselves, to sell ourselves for this position, we want to help set the stage for that. We want to let whoever's reading this know a little bit about who we are, so that they want to invite us for that interview. They want to get to know us a little bit more.
Right, for sure. So if somebody was writing, let's say, a cover letter for the first time, what kind of a format would you say would be the best to illustrate some of those skills and give context to the position?
Yeah, I would say probably, you know, a very simple format. If you're, you know, just starting in paid work or formal paid work, I don't think your cover letter needs to be that long. It could be as simple as, you know, three paragraphs, a little bit of introduction in terms of this is the job I'm applying for, you know, another second paragraph about a little bit of context of your background, your experience, taking maybe just two key things from your resume and building them out into a short paragraph that's maybe five or six sentences. And then a final paragraph just to wrap up, once again, articulate that you have a desire to work for this organization or company, and you look forward to connecting with them and the opportunity to discuss your qualifications further. I think we want to end our cover letter with a bit of a call to action, that letting the potential employer know that the individual, or that we're ready to meet with them, and we're looking forward to that opportunity and kind of inviting them to reach out to us to have that interview and take that next step.
Right. That's great. Thank you so much, Leslie. And one last question when it comes to resume and cover letter. If you're submitting them, do you submit it in a Word file or a PDF file?
You know what? That's such a great
question, Laura. And had you asked me this question 6 months or a year ago, I probably would have given a different answer. But because I was historically a PDF person all the way, but then, you know, very similar to the font issue, PDFs can only be opened using one particular program. And if for some reason that individual doesn't have Adobe on their system, they can't open it. So it's actually better practice to send your cover letter and resume in a Word file. It makes it easier to open. It can be open on a variety of different platforms, and just, again, is a better opportunity for your resume and cover letter not to get overlooked. If employers are using screening software, sometimes that screening software can't read a PDF. And so rather than seeing those keywords that you've taken the time and effort to make sure are in there, the screening software will actually just move you into the disqualified pile because it can't read what you've put in your resume and cover letter. So I'm a convert now. I am Word all the way.
That's too funny. See, I thought you were going to say PDF, but that makes total sense when you think about it, one, from a usability perspective, but also from the screening software too. Those are both great points. And again, it's just all about making it as simple and as easy as possible for that person that's hiring.
Yeah, I think that's such a great point. When we get down to it, simplicity is best. I mean, not to say that you want to keep everything so simple that you're not providing very much detail at all. But, you know, if you're trying to cram one more sentence into your resume or one more sentence onto your cover letter to keep the formatting looking just perfect and the way you want, then chances are you can probably find a place to take something out, because that last sentence may just be a little bit more fluff than you actually need.
Right, for sure. Well, I think that's all I had about the cover letters, but I think the last really big thing when it comes to building up your career profile, I guess you could say, is the LinkedIn profile. And I know this is a little bit of a daunting one for many people, but my question really pertained about, one is, who should have a LinkedIn profile? And then what are the three tips for building that profile and how we can use it to its full advantage?
I think LinkedIn is such a powerful tool. I would say that everyone should have a LinkedIn profile, especially as you start to build your professional career. And when I say professional, I don't necessarily mean, you know, sitting in an office, but anything in terms of, you know, your long-term employment and your future of work, whatever that looks like. Everyone should have a LinkedIn profile because it's all about networking. starting a LinkedIn profile as you're just beginning into that professional career sector, or as you're just starting into more professional paid work, is going to be easier. And I don't think there's anything wrong with building your LinkedIn profile over time. But as you continue to do that, you'll find that you have more connections that you can reach out to when you're looking for a new job or looking for someone with expertise in a particular area, or if you're looking for a mentor, or just to connect with like-minded people as your industry continues to change and new information comes out. Those are all things that you can do with your network on LinkedIn. One of the biggest tips that I would say when it comes to a LinkedIn profile is to remember that LinkedIn, while it is social media, it is something that's going to look very different from other social media you have. So it should not look like your Instagram account. It should not look like TikTok or Twitter or Facebook. And I'm probably aging myself by using some of those examples. That's fine. LinkedIn is all about who you are professionally, who you are in the business world. Your current employer may take a look at your LinkedIn profile, and I would almost guarantee that future employers will be looking at your LinkedIn profile before they hire you, and potentially even when you apply or before they interview you. So you want it to give the best impression of yourself and who you want to be as a professional. LinkedIn allows you to showcase your education and experience to a larger audience, but it's important to remember where we talked about refining our resume to be specific, the opposite applies to LinkedIn. Everyone's looking at your LinkedIn profile at the same time. So where your resume is specific, we want to make our LinkedIn profile a little bit more generic. That's not to say that it needs to include everything that's on your resume, or it needs to include, you know, your full job description from every place you've worked. But again, focusing on things from a more general perspective, knowing that it's about who you are now, who you were and what you've done in the past, and also keeping an eye to the future and potential future opportunities that you may want or that may come and find you. I'm not going to go into detail on how to build your LinkedIn profile. 4-H Canada has a great webinar that's available on demand on how to do that. But I would say, you know, just keep in mind that professional standpoint, and I think that'll really serve you well. The last thing that I would suggest when it comes to LinkedIn, and one of the best ways to utilize it is to be active on it. It's really easy, especially early in a career, to create the LinkedIn profile. You get it looking just the way you want. You've made some connections with friends and people you've worked with in the past, or maybe people you interact with through 4-H or other programs, and then you just walk away. And LinkedIn isn't going to do very much for you if you just kind of set it and forget it. You have to be active on it. So everything from connecting with new friends that you start to engage with at school, or new friends that you meet through various programs like 4-H. You can connect with companies and organizations that you're either part of or that you're interested in what they're doing professionally, or you're interested in the sector that they're part of. You can ask people to endorse you for the skills that you have. So for example, could ask your 4-H leader, if you're connected with them on LinkedIn, to endorse you as a great public speaker. And then that kind of gives you a little bit more credibility in terms of what you're saying about the skill that you have, because someone has said, yes, this is a skill that they have, and I've seen them use that skill in action. You can join groups of professionals or groups of individuals who work in a particular career that you're interested in or you want to be part of, and join discussions. You know, like people's posts, celebrate when people get new positions and share that they've gotten new positions, and comment on what people post and reshare what your network has shared. I would say it is provided that you do it in an authentic way and a meaningful way. All of that builds your profile on LinkedIn, and it will help build your brand. It will help build your network. And you start to see the payoff of that when people start commenting on your posts and they start reaching out to connect with you. They start inviting you to apply for particular jobs. But it doesn't happen on its own. Again, it takes a little bit of work, a little bit of care, but it really builds that network and support group around you.
Yeah, and I guess really like with any other social network, when you use the tools or the new things that they've introduced, the more it rewards you within exposure and making new connections and that sort of thing. So the better invested you can be in using those tools, the better. I think the only question I really had about that profile was crafting that bio sentence. And I can't remember exactly what it's called, but I feel like that is one of the most daunting parts of the LinkedIn profile.
Yeah, it can be,
I'm not sure. Is it the headline that you're thinking of?
I think so. It's almost the opportunity to give like a 2 to 3 sentence, say, bio about yourself. And it could be like, I've seen people use it as, say, I'm a so-and-so professional, or they have almost like an inspirational quote or something like that. And what is the proper way to use that? And how would maybe somebody craft a message like that for their profile?
Yeah, so there's the two pieces. There's the headline and the professional summary. So the headline is really kind of one clear line about who you are and your brand. And I would suggest that the best way to approach it is think about it as if, you know, someone who's looking at your profile only has that one headline to read. What do you want them to see and what do you want them to know? So it should be very concise, but it's going to vary from person to person what they put in that headline. The professional summary gives you a little bit more space to communicate about yourself and your brand, put your spin on your experiences and your future goals. You could include something about how other LinkedIn members can engage with you. Again, it shouldn't be too long, but it really should sum up kind of who you are and where you're going, or what you want to do and how you are contributing to kind of the world of work through the career path that you're choosing. With the professional summary, there is the caveat that if you keep it too short, it shouldn't be as short as the headline, because it needs to be at least 40 words long. If it's not at least 40 words, it won't show up in search results. And so if a potential employer got their search set up that you would appear, but your professional summary is less than 40 words, they actually could miss you. So you want to, you know, take some time, think about what you want to say in that summary, and just make sure it's more than 40 words.
Perfect. Thank you. And because I know even myself, I don't even think I have a summary, because it's just so daunting in the sense of, because I've looked at other people's profiles and the way that they phrase them, and it sounds so great. But again, it's like finding that goal and what you want to say with it. But those are great tips. Thank you so much, Leslie.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that anyone should stress about it. The great thing about LinkedIn, you know, is that it's fluid. You know, you can write it today and tomorrow go look at it and say, yeah, that really isn't what I think I want to say. And change it, as opposed to that resume and cover letter that goes out and it's kind of set and you've sent it to people to see in that final state. LinkedIn can change, and it should ebb and flow and change and grow as your career does. You might want to add more to a particular experience. If you're, you know, starting to look for new work, you may want to you know, beef up your LinkedIn profile a little bit with certain information, or you may want to take things off as they, you know, no longer apply to what you're actually currently doing. And I think the summary is similar. I think reading a lot of other people's summaries can help. I know I tried a lot of different versions before I finally landed on what I currently have on my LinkedIn profile. But yeah, it's all depends on who you are and what you want to communicate.
For sure. For sure. That's great. Thank you, Leslie. And actually, sorry, one last question here, and it's going to come back to the cover letter and resume a bit, but would you want to refer to or put a link to your LinkedIn profile on your resume and cover letter?
I think that's perfectly acceptable. There's no reason why you can't. I've seen actually quite a number of them who do include it on their resume. I would say maybe not on the cover letter, but on the resume, certainly your resume should start with your personal contact information. And that's normally where it would appear. The same way if someone has, you know, their own website that they've created that shows examples of their work or, various items that they want to share with employers, that would be the section where you could include that information as well.
Okay, perfect. That's a great tip too about that portfolio type piece, especially depending on the type of work that you're in. That's great. So I think the last little bit here, I wanted to give the opportunity to talk a little bit more about the opportunities that 4-H Canada has with respect to careers. I know particularly careers on the grow, but there's so many various opportunities within that. So would you want to talk a little bit about the benefits of each of those programs for youth and their future?
Yeah, for sure. Happy to. What I love about Careers on the Grow is it really is a bit like this giant umbrella under which there's a whole number of individual programs that are all part of Careers on the Grow. But each one is focused on supporting members in developing transferable skills and becoming career ready. When I talk about transferable skills, I'm talking about those soft skills. That word is used kind of interchangeably. These are the skills that help someone in any job. And most of all, they'll be helpful as someone moves from one job or career sector to another. So things like communication, critical thinking, networking, a growth mindset, creativity and leadership, formal schooling and education and training is where you're going to get your hard skills, the job specific skills that you might need in one career or in one job that you would never use in another job. When we talk about transferable or soft skills, these are the ones that apply no matter what job you're in or what career sector you're in. And that's what Careers on the Grow is all about building so that, you know, members are career ready and then they can thrive in their future careers.
And I know, just want to add here because I know I speak to this a lot, but when you hear from alumni and they talk about their 4-H experience, it's not that they say they learned about this XYZ in the vet club. It's that they gained leadership skills. It's that they gained communication skills, the ability to think critically, and those soft skills that come from 4-H are so important. And teaching people to be able to capitalize on those for their careers are so important.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, by the time members graduate into that senior member age group, which is where Careers on the Grow kind of sits, is for senior members. It's not that members don't have these skills. Absolutely, they do. Careers on the Grow is all about helping them refine them, helping them be able to articulate them, helping them be able to say, actually, you know what? That CAF club helped me build these transferable skills or these soft skills, and then be able to take that experience and communicate it effectively on their resume, on their cover letter, and in that job interview. Because 4-H experience and the skills that members are building in 4-H are the ones that are going to take them quite far. Yeah, so some of the exciting things that we have within Careers on the Grow, and there's quite a few of them. The first one that I want to mention is our e-mentorship program. And this is an opportunity that's available for members who are 18 to 25 and in good standing. It's a short-term one-on-one mentorship opportunity. basically members identify three goals that they want to work on in the program. And what we do if they're selected is then match them with a mentor who can help them work towards those individual goals. So 4-H mentees and mentors meet at least once a week in a virtual space for the 5 weeks of the program. It's an excellent opportunity to connect with someone who's already in their career and learn from their experience and insights. So we're currently actually accepting applications for this program. Applications are open now through October 25th, and then we'll be notifying everyone who's applied by October 28th. And the program runs from October 31st through December 9th.
We'll put some links to that in the show notes of this episode as well, so then people can find more information about it easily.
Perfect. The next opportunity that I wanted to share a little bit about is our internship program.
We just restarted this opportunity this summer after it was on a bit of a hiatus due to COVID-19. Internships are really an excellent opportunity for 4-H'ers to build their career readiness skills in a hands-on way by working for a business or an organization for about 4 to 8 weeks over the summer. Internships are available again for members 18 to 25 and in good standing. This past summer, we were able to offer six internships, I believe. And in 2023, we're going to be offering approximately 12 internship opportunities. They will take place in a couple of different formats, in person, virtually, and in a hybrid manner. So members will have the opportunity to experience in-person work as well as virtual workspaces as well. These are paid internships, so it's a great way to not only get hands-on experience, but also to earn some money over the summer. Interns receive an honorarium of $500 a week for each week of full-time work once they've successfully completed their internship. So we'll open applications for internships on November 23rd, and they'll close on January 13th. And all applicants will be notified by the end of March. So well in advance of when internships begin, and still with lots of time to plan for the rest of summer. So members can apply for as many internships as they'd like, and as many as they feel that they're qualified for and would like to build skills in. It's such an amazing opportunity. And I'd really encourage members that are 18 to 25 to take a look at some of the awesome internships that we're going to be offering for 2023.
Wow, that's great. And that's awesome too, that there's an available honorarium as well, because I know internships, there's kind of that gray area of what that can look like when it comes to compensation. So that's great to be able to offer that to our youth. And do you have maybe some examples of some of the positions that people may be able to take part in, and with what employers?
Yeah, I don't want to say too much about what we're offering in 2023 just yet. We're still confirming some of those. But this summer, we offered internships with Canadian Red Cross, Second Harvest, Food Banks Canada, BASF Canada, and we actually had two interns at 4-H Canada. So six. I was trying to remember exactly how many we had. We had six. That was the number.
Very cool. That's great. And would they be serving in various sectors within or career places within those roles?
They are. Each internship position, when we open applications, all the positions will have a job description posted that'll give more detail of what the internship involves. It'll indicate specifically kind of what career area it is, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, if you see an interesting opportunity, but you're not, for example, going to school for marketing and communications, that doesn't mean that you're excluded from applying. You can absolutely apply, provided that you have the skills and qualifications that the posting is looking for, and you have an interest in building skills in those areas of work, and you're interested in the work of the internship host. We definitely have had interns this past summer who are pursuing careers in various sectors, everything from agriculture to medicine, and all found really engaging opportunities to work with our internship hosts and build their skills.
That's great. That's very exciting. So we'll have to let our all make sure all of our 4-H'ers know that that's coming this November.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's just a couple other things that are part of the Careers on the Grow that I'd love to just mention. One is our career exploration modules. And these are modules that can help members build key career readiness skills and practice them in a personalized, hands-on, experiential way. We have two modules that are available for free download from our website. One is targeted to secondary level members and one to post-secondary members. They are completely individualized, meaning that members will complete activities considering their own career focus and their own personal career journey. They can be done individually or within a club context or even in a small group of 4-H friends. You could work on it together. One of the last big things that I'll mention is our career development webinars. Every year we offer at least two career preparedness webinars through the Careers on the Grow program. And the topics of these webinars come directly from member feedback. Our next webinar is coming up on November 10th at 7:30 p.m. Eastern, titled How to Write a Winning Scholarship Essay. And it's going to be delivered by Janet McDonald from MyCampus GPS. The webinar is free to attend and open to all members 16 to 25, their families and leaders. And I would particularly encourage anyone who is going to be applying for scholarships this year. That essay component is a huge piece, and this is your opportunity to get some really great tips on how you can write the best essay and win scholarships. And speaking of our career development webinars, there's some great past webinars like how to effectively search and apply for jobs, what you need to know about scholarships, writing a standout resume, mastering the job interview, and building your LinkedIn profile. They're all there and can be accessed at any time.
Wow, there's so many great resources all within that Careers on the Grow program. That's absolutely wonderful, Leslie. You guys must be so proud of all the work that you've done with that, and being able to support youth and their future in that way is just so amazing.
Yeah, we're pretty proud of all the programs, and even more proud of the members that participate in them and seeing them thrive and flourish and go on to have really rewarding careers. We also have volunteer leader resources that are available focused on helping leaders integrate some of these transferable skills right into what they're already doing in their clubs. And those can be downloaded for free from the website as well by volunteer leaders at any time.
That's great. We'll be sure to put those links in the show notes as well. Before I let you go, is there anything else that you would like to add?
Oh my goodness. What haven't I talked about? I think I would just add that, you know, building your career and starting out in your career is daunting and scary, and that it can be overwhelming. But I think, you know, knowing that you have this amazing support system through 4-H and resources and programs like Careers on the Grow and programs that are offered at the provincial level and through 4-H Ontario as well, I would just really encourage members to get involved and make use of those resources. Now's the time to use it and to explore and look at all the possibilities and open yourself up to them, because very quickly the time goes by. And I think when you're starting out in your career journey, you want to be very attuned to the opportunities that are available and the ones that you might not know about, because we're seeing this trend in the world of work where it is more common than ever before to shift jobs, not just have 7 to 10 jobs in the span of your career, but to shift dramatically. And you really want to have a good sense of who you are and what you're looking for, not just in your job and career, but in your future employer. And the more that you're tuned into that as you start on this journey, I think the more success that you'll have and the more rewarding you'll find the world of work to be.
That's great. Thank you so much, Leslie, for taking the time to chat with us today and share all your tips and tricks on resumes, cover letters, LinkedIn profiles, and sharing all the resources that are available through Careers on the Grow. I really appreciate you taking the time to chat about them. This podcast will continue to be a great resource for people, and I'm really excited to share it out. So thank you so much.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. It's great chatting with you today.